Hey everybody, welcome back to the Nerdcast. It's another episode, another week. I am your host, Devin, joined as always with Justin.
Hello.
And manning the boards is Kelly.
Hello.
So we've got a fresh new episode of The Mandalorian to talk about, and a bunch of other news. It's coming to you a little bit late today. I was out of town for the weekend. My family moved up our Christmas weekend celebration thingy. So I went to Fort Worth, and that's exhausting, man. There are too many kids. Like, my older brother has two, my younger sister has three, and they're all under 10.
Oh, so. The magic. It's when you got to make the magic happen.
Well, I mean, I'm fun Uncle Devin, I guess, because like they all just want to spend all their time playing with me, but I'm also really lazy and out of shape and just generally tired. So like I don't have the ability. Like,
kids, like Uncle Devin plays video games.
Well, you know, they're way more into that than I am at this point. Yeah, they have cocaine in their veins, man. They're just constantly going. I don't get how it happens, but yeah. So that's why we're a little bit late on this, but I've been assured that we've all watched the latest episode, so I think we're ready to chat about that. How are you doing, man?
Good, good. Better than the last time.
Yeah, you're recovering from.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I'm still can be a little shaky.
Really?
Once in a while, yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. Maybe it's my imagination.
It's probably your imagination. Yeah.
I mean, you go through something like that. And
you just never just balancing on that razor's edge, that anxiety. Like, I hate when that happens. Like, every time I get sick and then recover from it, like, the slightest, whenever I feel warmth, I'm like, oh my God, am I getting sick again? Like, no way. Like, the heater just turned on, or the AC's not on here, or, oh yeah, I'm wearing like two sweaters for some reason.
It's funny. Like, every year for a long time, in around late October, early November, I always come down with a sinus infection. Forever. This year, I avoided it, I think.
Knock on wood.
Knock on wood. But I take Benadryl at night.
Oh, I do that every day.
I don't do it every day. I don't want to lessen the punch. And it seems really this time of year is the worst. And I'm still dealing with it. You know, when I wake up, I can feel. But just the fact that Benadryl works pretty well. It can dry it up and just keeps it from happening at night and just kind of keeps it from metastasizing into something else.
How have you been doing, Kelly? Are you recovering from any sicknesses?
No sicknesses. All good right now. We're all fine here.
Strong as an ox.
All right. Well,
fine
then.
Here. How are you? Nice.
I'm good. Well, let's roll into some news then.
All right. First up, Riot Games settles a lawsuit. They will now pay every female employee they've had since 2014 with $10 million each.
Holy shit.
Well, not $10 million each. They're like between.
No, between. Oh,
that's what I meant. My
bad. They could probably afford $10 million each.
If they had to pay one of them $10 million each, you know they sexually harassed the shit out of her.
Damn. Well, so they have like 2,000 some odd employees, and I guess. There's, 1,000 of them are female?
This is saying they have about 2,500, and approximately they think about 1,000 female during that time period.
So there are some women that are going to get paid from this.
That's a pretty – I mean, that's almost 50-50.
It's almost 50. That's actually surprising. Like, if I was going to guess, I would have guessed,
company?
Like – oh, especially. So the background on this story is, I guess, about a year or so ago, the gaming website Kotaku had an investigation where – they kind of uncover this culture, I guess is how they describe it, a culture of bro culture, misogynistic culture in the
culture you would imagine when a whole bunch of dudes form a company that makes video games.
As someone who's worked in the video game industry for 14 years, basically a video game company, you know, like, and I'm not, that's why I was a little surprised at the number of female employees there, because that is definitely not typical for any of the places I've worked at.
No.
But so I guess as a part of this investigation, there was all sorts of people coming out who've worked for Riot or that have shared their stories and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, there was all this back and forth going on with the people that were filing, I guess, a suit against Riot, and Riot coming up with all of these, like, we're going to change our ways. We're putting this into the employee handbook and all of that sort of stuff. And at the end of the day, it distills down to, you know, writing a $10 million check. Yeah. So, you know, they definitely.
That's probably what they should have just done from the beginning, I guess.
Yeah,
here's $10 million. We're really sorry. We'll try and change it. Give them the money first, then we'll try and change it afterwards.
Yeah, it's a really weird thing because, like, Riot is such a they're a huge company, and they definitely have the money. Like between League of Legends and everything that's built up around that, like League of Legends is a cottage industry basically.
Yeah,
and like they have the capacity to pay $10 million across, you know, 1,000 people. So like the fact that they're in that position just lets you understand, like, or at least for me, it makes me wonder, like, what kind of environment is that workplace like? Like, anytime you work anywhere that could generate that kind of revenue and that kind of reach in such a quick amount of time, like, something's bound to give one way or another. Like, these aren't just guys, you know, in their garage making a video game anymore. You know, it's not like four guys on Unity, you know, coming up with some cool version of Pong or whatever. Like, this becomes its own fucking industry, you know? And I guess the things that you might be able to get away with when you're just, you know, slapping ass with your bros, you know, all of a sudden it becomes, you know, a $10 million payout.
We don't really have enough time to get into all, and I don't think it's there's no excuse for acting in a way that makes people feel uncomfortable.
Right.
You know what I mean? And especially when they've made it known, like, hey, I'm not sure if you get this, but this is making me feel uncomfortable, and you continue to do it. You can't be doing that shit. You know what I mean? But it's just like the more people you get in a company like that, there's just so many.
Like there are a lot of there are a lot of variables that increase the likelihood that something like that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Fortunate for Riot, they have the money to pay $10 million across 1,000 people. So, and then I guess it's based off of, you know, tenure, how long they've been there determines how much you get. But I mean, still, the fact that there's any amount at all.
And I think a lot of this too is driven, again, at the end of the day, when you get past all, you know, all the things we've just talked about, it's still seen to some degree as a male dominant industry.
Oh, it is completely. It's not just seen as male dominant. Yeah, it is male dominant.
That's why we were so surprised that there were 1,000 women working at Riot. And I think that if you had real parity, right? I mean, like there were, you know, lots of game companies who were founded by women. Lots of small studios where it's just women. And a lot, you know, what
or
I mean?
More game studios, you know, that are also 50% women.
Yeah, I mean, the perceived power imbalance, or the basically who holds the conch. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It goes back to Lord of the Flies. Right now, the dudes are holding the conch, and you know what I mean? What they're saying with the conch and all the slap ass is making some of the other kids in the face paint a little nervous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the dudes with the conch just have to pay everybody else $10 million.
Yeah.
So, you know, when it's not just dudes holding the conch, you know what I mean? Maybe some of this will be, you know what I mean, a little bit, I don't know, mitigated, or maybe not.
So that commercial is like some dude gives his wife or whatever a Peloton exercise bike. I'm not super familiar with a Peloton. Like, what makes it special? Is it just that it has a video screen on it?
Yeah, and it like links up, and you can like my brother's wife has one, or my brother has one. They all use it, and it has a screen on it, and you can like get a live feed of a live spin class, and you can like do it with them.
Okay, you can do it
and
with them,
maybe
okay.
They can see you. I don't know
how that one works.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe like
in
if
the
you
commercial,
do well,
in the
like,
in the commercial, the trainer actually does call her out. So
yeah, they can see you, I guess. And there's like a leaderboard, I think, you know, how well you're doing and stuff.
Man. You know,
I mean, it's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing. Know? I actually did Orange Theory for a while, and it was a lot.
What is
like,
Orange Theory?
It's a crazy psycho workout where you go in and, you know, you could put an armband and monitor your heart rate, but it keeps it up on a board and whatnot.
Oh,
it's,
Jesus.
It's
the video gamification of
it's pretty intense. So this dude gives his wife this Peloton, and she has this expression on her face like he just dared her to eat a pile of horse shit or something. Like, it's a really like doomed expression. But then she starts working out, and she's like, it's like giving her all this, like, what seems like anxiety. Like, she's waking up in the morning, like, almost in a cold sweat, you know, because she has to go do her Peloton. Like, it's a really bizarre ad. Like, I guess maybe it's marketed towards people who view exercise as a punishment that they deserve for being fat and lazy or something, you know, right?
I don't know. I saw it, and I heard the song, and I liked that song. So I was like, I remember that song. And then I was watching the video, and I was like, what is going on here? I couldn't hear what they
like
were saying.
It's almost like a Black Mirror skit.
But it seemed really weird. Like, she seems like she doesn't have a lot of agency. Like she seems like the machine is like she's a slave to the machine. Yeah. You know what I mean? And yes. It's just down there like pulsing with this like
boom, boom.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And she like opens the door and it's just there. You know what I mean? And then she like she gets yeah, on she it and she rides. It. You know what I mean? It's a crazy commercial, and the look on her face is not a look of like, this is so much fun.
Yeah, no, it's not. It is the opposite of that. Yeah. It is like, I think this might be the death of me soon.
And then she like at the end shows videos to her like husband, or she's like, look at me on the Peloton. This is me on the Peloton.
Like she's been indoctrinated.
Yeah, it's like, look, see, I did good. Did I do good? You know what I mean? Maybe I'm shooting my own shit on there. I don't know. Maybe I got some of my own stuff going on. I don't know, but it seems horrifying to me, and I was like, this is a really crazy commercial for a Peloton.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think a little bit of it is what they call aspiration in the advertising business.
It's aspirational.
You just yeah. what they're you there's shit going on, but what you're actually seeing is the house that it's in.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
seeing how big their TV is and how cool yeah. their furniture is and you know what I mean? You're seeing all that.
And how this Peloton fits right in with all yeah, that exactly. sleek like design.
People that have these Pelotons are the kind of people that, you know, have this lifestyle yeah. that you aspire to, you know what I mean? And those are the real messages they're trying to send.
Right.
The other shit a lot of times is just some shit like it's like the magician. If he's playing three-card Monty, you know, the shit that happens in the commercial, the actual narrative of the commercial is just the fucking snapping yeah. that confuses you when the card, the ball goes away. Yeah. You know what I mean? This was a strange commercial.
Yeah, it definitely was. It spawned, like, so it went viral, which I guess is what you want in a commercial. Like, if there's anything that you want a commercial to do is to go viral for whatever reason. Right? Because, I mean, how many times have we said Peloton in this video so far?
Yeah.
But
well, they honestly, they win.
They win.
They win.
They win.
We spent how long? What are we into now? We spent, what, 7 minutes talking about it? Yeah. We just gave them 7 minutes of our valuable YouTube audience, our
our
millions
of
subscribers.
Our couple of subscribers. No, but like so, Ryan Reynolds actually cast her in an ad for his gin. I guess poked fun at that Peloton commercial.
He did,
you know? Yeah. Like she's sitting at a bar. She looks like she's trying to come to terms with like being assaulted by someone, you know. And like her friends are there, and they're like, "Here, you need to just drink this." And she drinks the gin, and they're like, "Oh, this is gonna be a long night," or something like that. Like it's pretty funny how it's framed. It's almost like it's the sequel to the Peloton ad.
His tweet about it is seriously. Ryan Reynolds just tweeted a video of it with the name Aviation Gin, and it just says exercise bike not included.
So he was definitely teeing off of it, and he cast her in it.
Reynolds
is
pretty cool.
He's a pretty funny dude.
He's emerging as like, you know what I mean. He seems to have adapted well.
He's come a long way from that pizza place.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he just seems to have adapted well to this kind of Twitter
yeah.
clusterfuck that is our reality. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like all the constantly being on, like you're, you know, the kind of meta world that we live in where everything's a weird reference. We live in this kind of postmodern mirror up to a mirror, and it's yeah. just literally reflecting itself until the singularity yeah. almost fucking closes, and all of reality has exploded, and we're just surfing the fucking chaos right into the apocalypse. You know, if we're all surfing the chaos, he's doing it best.
Definitely, he's leading the pack.
He's up. You know? He's fucking. He's hanging. Yeah. 10. He's on the curl. You know what I mean? I salute you, Ryan Reynolds.
That's probably the best description of the modern zeitgeist that I'm probably ever going to hear. All right, with that, let's move on to the next bit.
I do just want to give one quick shout out. I saw a really funny spoof video of the Peloton.
Yeah.
From, I don't know if she's a comedian, Eva Victor. Her Twitter handle is Eva and her IUD, so I'm assuming she's probably a comedian of some kind. But she pretty much did a video of like her holding the phone. Oh, my husband got a Peloton bike. What the hell's wrong with him? And she's pretty much evolving to her, like, what kind of psycho buys his wife? And then eventually, and then it's like, I got a present for you, divorce papers. But it's all like from her filming from the phone view, like the Peloton ad. But it was really good. Look her up. That was pretty good.
All right.
Yeah.
Man, I mean, is that offensive to give somebody an exercise bike?
I, unless, if they tell you you want it, I would never, ever give my wife
the one married one
an exercise,
in the room.
An exercise.
If thing. She didn't ask,
if
for
she
it.
Didn't tell me like what I'd like for Christmas this year is a Peloton, I'd be like, well, there's a way too expensive. We're not doing that. But but if you know I could afford a Peloton, I mean I don't know how expensive they are. They seem expensive. But because the
they're aspirationally expensive.
I actually know how much they are. They're expensive. But it rewinds back to a second ago when I said I don't know. I think that's something the girl says, like, I'd like one,
and then
we should get that for each other for Christmas. That's a gift that you give each other for Christmas. You know what I mean? It's like we give each other but I mean, like, I don't know. I personally would rather go join a gym. I think maybe.
Yeah.
Because it's not in my house. You know, and
you got to find a space for it.
Yeah. And I'm just no.
And
I'm
it never, an exercise remotely, bike never looks good anywhere in a house.
Yeah.
Unless
doesn't.
You have a gym in the house.
Yeah. And I'm just not remotely disciplined enough to get on a fucking.
You're not
going to
be shamed
bike.
By the you know? Bike like that woman was.
I mean, if the dude calls me out on the screen, I'd be like, check this shit out. Click. Turns out we're not in the same room, motherfucker. You know what I mean? I'm out of here. But it's just not my thing. But I think that it's a great. I mean, it's obviously a great product, and people love it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I really wanted to see it. I was surprised at how well it performed. Honestly, I don't know why. I mean, it's Disney. We talked about this at length numerous times. Like, they just knock it out of the park with every release. But it's one of those things where it's like, because kind of the similar thing sort of happened with. I'm gonna butcher her name, but Lupita Nyong'o. Mm-hmm. Like after 12 Years a Slave and all of the acclaim she got from that, like, she had a really hard time getting other roles. I think her next role after that was Star Wars: The Force Awakens.
Yeah, I remember her next two things were both voice acting, that and Jungle Book.
Yeah, she did voice acting for a lot of things. It wasn't. I don't think. What was her? Do you know, Kelly, by any chance, what her first non-voice acting role was after 12?
Give me a second. I can look that up.
I feel like it might have been Black Panther.
For Lupita, correct?
Yes.
Okay, give me a second.
Black Panther. But, I mean, this is just one of those situations where, you know, on one hand, yes, I think Mena Massoud probably has a little bit of a point, a little bit of a thing to grind about. Okay, I was a part of this thing. It's been a huge blockbuster success. He's not asking for roles, just auditions, like just the ability to audition for a role. But at the
Did
same
he say
time,
he hasn't had any auditions or any roles.
He said he hasn't had any auditions. So, like, that's like. The audition, like, the role thing is different. Like, I can understand how someone could star at something that's a major hit and then not get any roles for a while after. Like, that's just a part of, you know, the sausage grinder. But to not get any auditions after something like that.
I don't know about that. I don't know. He might have been exaggerating.
You think he's exaggerating?
Possibly.
What makes you say that?
Just because it's like pilot season. Like, a lot of actors, you know what I mean, are going out like 5 times a day. You know
yeah.
I mean? He might mean I haven't gotten any auditions for huge leading roles in films, maybe, or something. I don't know. It seems like he to have no auditions whatsoever after being in that movie.
There's a reason why this is
anything that are going 5 times a day.
I mean, there's a reason why this is a headlining news story that we're talking about. You know, and I feel like I read this report in Variety, I believe.
I mean, I saw the report, and I've also seen various YouTube people talking.
Yeah,
about
I would imagine that, you know, somebody probably looked into that. You know, before, maybe not.
You can't tell.
You can hardly tell. Well, I mean, if he's been giving a chance, like if somebody, you know, not if he's had auditions, but if someone's offered him one, an audition for something.
Yeah, I'm not going to say the guy's lying. That's all I'm saying. I'm just, maybe there's, that just seems, you know, I mean, I don't think it's any mystery that Hollywood's kind of racist. You know,
yeah,
I mean, that's,
it shouldn't
if
be
that's
a mystery.
If that's the implication, yeah. Pretty much. You got it.
I think that is the implication.
I mean, it's a racism driven by, you know, a narrow view of kind of capitalist, you know.
Yeah,
I mean?
It is.
I don't think those people are like, you know, Mississippi Burning in the studio. Can't have these people on our screens. It's not that. They just don't think people want to see.
Right.
You know what
it,
I mean?
It's the funny thing is it's one of those beliefs that's not driven by data, because whenever they do something like, you know, Crazy Rich Asians, which was. It got a lot of acclaim, not just for being a good movie, but also for being a movie that bucked that that convention that, oh, you know, people only Asian people would want to go see a movie about Asians starring Asians, and that's not a big enough demographic to warrant the cost of that of producing that film. And then they release it. It turns out it's a big success. Same thing with Black Panther. It's like, oh shit, people actually like movies that star black people if they're good movies. Like, well, what have we been doing all this time? You know,
yeah.
Like, there's not really a lot of data that backs up. Like, people don't want to watch shitty movies, but I mean, that's regardless of the color of the person that's starring in it. So like that sort of convention might still, even like in the year of our Lord 2019, that it might still be driving decisions like that is bonkers to me.
It's more pernicious than just that.
It must be.
It's like there was a quote from Ridley Scott, and when he was under fire for having a white guy play Moses in his
he basically
said, hey, you know what I mean, I could put Muhammad something or other in that role and
I couldn't get
any money to make the movie.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, if I want the movie to be made, I've got to put a big star in there, you know what I mean, and you know the amount of star it's limited with who we can choose because of the, you know, the box office draw. And I guess
the concern here is that when you have a dude who starred in Aladdin, like a Disney production that did $1 billion and all of this and that, like you would think that would make him that kind of a name, where at least put him as a chip in the pile of up and coming names.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, and maybe.
When did Aladdin come out?
Yeah, it hadn't been out. I mean, it's been out, 6 months, 8 months?
It came out earlier in the year, spring.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like it, you know what I mean? It's been all that long. But I mean, if he hasn't gotten... Okay, if we assume that he hasn't gotten any auditions whatsoever, no one has called his agent and said, hey, we have can we see so-and-so? Or his agent hasn't sent him out for, you know... Because that's the thing. I guess that maybe, you know, it's weird. So I have a little knowledge of this, right?
Okay.
You know, your agent sends you out on stuff.
Right.
You know, stuff they have the breakdowns and of all the parts that they're having at casting, and your agent's like, I think so-and-so would be good for that. I'm going to send them. They call, and you just can't go in. You know?
Right,
I mean?
Right.
And the people that are putting the thing together, the people that are doing the movie, they're not calling you.
Right.
And being like, unless you're Brad Pitt. Or you're, you know, Lupita Nyong'o now, or you're, you know, a big star. Then a lot of times there are people that'll have projects and they might have you in mind. And they'll be like, hey, we'd really like to send a script to so-and-so. And you know what I mean? Now, it might still be an audition. It might be like, well, we've got several people in mind for this, but we really like them to come and read for this. You know what I mean? And there's some huge celebrities that are like, fuck it, I won't come read for it. You either cast me or you don't.
Yeah.
I'm a huge famous celebrity. And then there's some that, well, you know, it's like, this is a great script. I really want to do this.
Big actors that are you know, themselves more proactive about that sort of thing. Like, we have to get in our one reference per episode, but like, you know, with Henry Cavill for The Witcher.
Yeah.
You know, like he wanted to.
You've
got to
add that to the end. I have an excellent Henry Cavill Witcher anecdote that I.
Okay. But he wanted to be Geralt, you know, so he was the one that went out of his way to try to get his, and you know, the showrunner, I forget her name, but you know, she liked what he offered and all that. And you know, obviously he's a name and whatnot, but she still went through the audition process with other people. And you know, they went to Cavill anyways, probably one part because he's a good actor. You know, he was committed to the role and had familiarity with it. Another part, he's Henry Cavill and it's a Netflix show, you know, so. But, I mean, he was still proactive. He didn't wait for his agent to come to him. And I feel like probably maybe that's something that younger actors need to, you know, probably do a little bit more too. If this story is to be believed, where this guy stars in Aladdin, makes $1 billion, and then gets nothing.
Yeah. So what I'm thinking is maybe what he means is, when he says I haven't had any auditions, is no one has sent him a script and said we want him to audition for this role.
Okay, so you're taking the definition of haven't had auditions as meaning something
specific. Like what he, you know, because to me that makes sense, and it would still be a major bummer. You know what I mean? It's still pretty infuriating.
It's a little less mysterious than the core reading of haven't had an audition.
Yeah. I mean, because the thing is there's auditions that his agent could send him on. You know what I mean? I mean, it's been 6 months. There's been something that he could go on. But his point probably is, hey, I'm the leading man in this movie that just made over $1 billion, and no one has sent me a script saying, hey, we'd like you to come in and read for this part. You know what I mean? No one's got me in mind for any of this stuff.
Fair
you
enough.
Know what I mean? And if that's his point, that's that's an excellent point. If his point is, I haven't had an audition whatsoever since, you know, like there's been nothing I could possibly go out on since, you know, then he needs to get a new agent.
Yeah, yeah. And I was thinking that, like, he probably just, you know, needs to, you know, start looking at the Rolodex for
but
a new agent.
But then again, man, what I don't know about being an actor in Hollywood and being in a huge movie could fill a fucking book. So, you know what I'm saying? I'm just speculating and, you know. I think that guy, you know, deserves to be in something else. I mean, he's in something else right now.
He's got a show, a Hulu show that's about to.
I was just looking at it. It's called Reprisal. It's Hulu, so all the episodes just dropped last weekend.
Nice.
He's third billed in that, so I don't know how.
He's what?
Big. He's third billed.
Ah,
okay. So I don't know how big, that cast is.
And, you know, it again, going back to our earlier conversations, it will be an uphill battle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's why Tyler Perry and Jordan Peele just did their own things, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's getting better. It's like Cleveland says. Yeah.
You don't win. You just do a little better each time.
It's getting better, but, you know, it is what it is still, unfortunately.
The one thing I'd like to add, though, that the other story that came out days later, which is why it's just becoming a bigger deal, they've announced that Disney Plus is going to make a spinoff show for Billy Magnuson's Prince Andrew's character, who's in the movie. It's great. He comes out, he steals the one scene he's in, but still it's like, oh, they're going to give the spinoff to the one white guy in the movie. So I thought that was just kind of weird timing for that to happen right after that other news.
Where is his character from?
What, the Prince? Prince
Anders?
Yeah, he just shows up. He's supposed to, the king like wants to.
He's a suitor for Jasmine. Ender,
exactly.
Right?
That's what I was going to say.
But where is he from in the movie?
Like a different land somewhere near.
They don't say he's not from like Norway or something.
No, I forgot what it was. I don't remember exactly where it was.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, it's what if his character was awesome for his brief moment in the movie, then I can understand why, you know, they might want to expand upon him.
But he does a voice, and do we want to hear him do a funny voice for like 10 episodes?
It'll probably be for kids, right?
I imagine it's not going to be. It's not going to be parallel to the Mandalorian.
anything with a funny voice for 10 episodes.
Yeah, I just spent a weekend with kids, and the shit that they're able to stomach from television, they could handle a funny voice for 10 episodes.
I mean,
I'm sure it'll be interesting. I don't know. I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know what other. If they were going to spin off Aladdin, I don't know what other characters from that movie that's not Aladdin or the genie would be appropriate for an interesting spinoff. I think probably any particular suitor of the princesses would be ample opportunity to build on a massive world without stepping on the Aladdin story, especially if they're from a far off land. You could pretty much make a story about anything at that point.
It's tough. I mean, it's the optics aren't great.
The optics are not good at all, especially when on top of this story.
The way those shows work is like usually someone will have an idea.
Yeah,
they'll bring it in. They'll put it together. They'll come in. They'll pitch it. You know what I mean? And someone pitched. You know what I mean? Around this character, maybe that guy did or whatever. And they were like, oh, you know what I mean? Yeah, that could work. That's good.
That was probably pitched a long time ago.
You know? Yeah, maybe. Or I mean, I'm sure that based on his performance, someone was like, you know, that guy could be able, and they put it together and they went and they pitched it. And Disney said, yeah, that could be cool. We could, we'll do that. Especially based on the amount of money they made. It doesn't work usually the other way where they're like, we need shows, you know what I mean, with no white guys as the lead. We need some non-white guy lead shows. I mean, sometimes it does, but a lot of times it works. They put the show together and the idea and all that stuff, and they come with that to the people, you know what I mean? And they could be like, yeah, no, we're not doing white guys right now, you know what I mean? But if they thought if the guy was good in the movie, if he stole the scene he was in, they thought it was a good show, they liked the script and where it was going, they're like, you know. Yeah, I mean, we'll do this. And then, of course, it breaks right after this guy has a speech talking about how he has any parts, and it's just like, it's just Jesus Christ.
Really, really bad timing. I mean? Really bad timing there.
I mean, but again, if the implication is that Hollywood is racist, yes, it is.
Yeah, I don't think anyone here is trying to talk you out of that one. But
I mean, if that's
but it is getting a little better each time.
Yeah, I mean, they're working on it. You know,
they're working
I mean?
On
they're
it.
Working
work
on both sides of it, the sexism and the racism thing. You know, it's You know, but keep complaining, because if you stop complaining, then
it goes. It gets worse. It gets worse if you stop complaining.
It's basically like a rock. You're pushing it uphill, and there theoretically is an end. It's not a Sisyphean task, but you know.
Oh, it's Sisyphean. It is absolutely a Sisyphean task, because if you stop for a second, it's coming back down on you.
If you stop for a second, it comes back down. But you know,
there's no. We made it.
Well, that at some point,
I guess maybe the South Park Goobax episode is the ultimate conclusion.
At some point in the future,
it.
You think there's got to be a we made it. Jesus.
No. Let's not give false hope to these people. Anyways, your Henry Cavill thing?
Oh, he's talking about his Witcher voice. And he said that originally in this new featurette for The Witcher, he says, originally I was doing like a British voice because the guy who reads the novels, the novel is from Yorkshire, and I was doing his voice kind of like that. But then he was like, you know, after watching the game, and I was like, dude, and he's like,
he's played as much of it as I have at this point, probably.
He was like, he goes, well, you know, Doug Cockle's performance was so amazing, you know, and fairly singular, you know what I mean? He was like, I just kind of felt like, and he went into some specifics why he felt that also worked. And so he goes, I don't make him American, but I do. And then they cut to where he goes, I had him filed down. You know what I mean? And it doesn't sound British at all.
No, it doesn't sound British. He's British.
I've heard him talk in other parts of the show, and he does have a British accent.
Okay.
But that particular delivery.
I had them filed down.
Yeah,
it was very Dave Cockrell.
Yeah,
Dave Cockrell had his lawyers on the phone at that point.
Oh, I'm sure Doug Cockrell.
Oh, he's
like,
all about it. Yeah.
That's starting.
You signing up for that one, Justin?
That's fucking crazy.
It's Disney, man. Like, the whole thing is an immersive experience.
Who has $3,000 a night?
You would be surprised at how many people have $3,000 a night to burn.
How much do people usually spend on Disney trips?
A lot. I mean, well, usually, so I have a friend that goes there every year, and what she tells me is that it's usually around $2,000 to $3,000 a trip. But that's a trip that you're doing a lot of other stuff. That's not just for the room for one night.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I guarantee you there are a lot of people that would spend $3,000 a night in a room like that. Well,
this is for a 2-day itinerary.
What's up?
It's like a 2-day itinerary. So this is like for, I guess, I'm assuming the 3,300 means it's a 2-day event.
Oh, okay, so you're doing stuff.
Well, I think
basically you're cosplaying Star Wars in a Star Wars cosplay environment.
Yeah, so like the whole idea is that when you go there, you get there on a shuttle, like a bus, but like the bus is outfitted like a starship, and it doesn't have windows. It has monitors where the windows are that play space. So it looks like you're actually...
Well, that sounded pretty dope. Let's do some quick math. You say it's $3,300 for five people?
Yes.
So if five people stay in that hotel room, it costs $3,300.
Hey, it says cabin for five. That's all it says.
So. Cabin for five. So you're talking about five people splitting.
$3,300 divided by five, $660 divided by two. So basically, it's $330 a day, you know, per person to go live in Star Wars World.
That's about what the tickets are for the actual places, right? Or
no, the park's like, it's like 179.
Okay, right.
Like,
well, if you were going to get together a group of your closest pals and go do it, that's fine. But I mean, if you're, you know, mom and dad with three kids or something,
exactly.
You know.
I mean, it's at that kind of rate. And there's people that just blow crazy amounts of cash at Disney, and they will, but that just seems high even for that. I mean, starting at that. I mean, if you're a family,
but Justin, it's an immersive experience.
So like, you're a family.
As soon as you get off that shuttle, you step into a space station.
Hey, you're just hook it to my veins, dude. You know who you're talking to. You know what I mean? I vetoed the Rise of the Resistance. You know,
we were going to talk about a video I watched of Rise of the Resistance, the ride at Disney. Because it just looks unbelievably fucking cool. I think it's like a 20-minute ride too, so you get
that's
your money's
10 minutes,
worth.
But that's still
I've heard
a
20
lifetime.
But I mean,
oh, maybe it's longer. I heard 10, but that's maybe
10
that's
minutes
a,
is still
it's
really
a
long.
Lifetime when it comes to a theme park ride.
Yeah, and it looks amazing. Google it, find it, watch it.
I haven't watched
He's
the video.
He's decided not to watch
I
it.
I don't want
to
watch it.
He wants to go
I
experience
go
it.
Experience it. When I was a kid, I went on Haunted Mansion and went on Pirates of the Caribbean. No one was like, okay,
this is what's going to happen.
Here's a fucking video, Pirates of the Caribbean. Watch it. Now go have Pirates of the Caribbean. Fuck that shit. I want to go do it. I want to be there and be like, holy shit,
you're
I can't
be
believe
waiting
this
in
is
a
happening.
Line. for more than half a day.
Yeah, you fast pass that shit.
They don't accept fast pass.
Oh,
for
really?
It. They do not accept fast shit. Pass for it.
When I go, it won't be that bad.
3-4 years from now, probably. But I mean,
you got to go in off times and shit. You got to figure out, like, there was a dude. I did watch this video. He put a video of himself on YouTube. He went to Disneyland which they're gonna have at Disneyland too. He went to Disneyland on Thanksgiving night, and it was pouring down rain, and there was nobody there. Everyone was lit.
People were working there?
Entire park. Yeah, it was open. He went on Pirates of the Caribbean like I don't know, 20 times, and he had like the entire boat to himself. I was just like, whoa, dude. He was videoing in the ride. He was like, yeah, this is me, and blah, blah, blah. I'm over here doing this. And I was like, man, he went on Small World. He went on all the rides. It was actually kind of like getting go back to Disneyland, just kind of watching the YouTube video. I was like, yeah, thanks for this, dude. This is fun.
Man, that really just bums me out that those people are working there on a stormy Thanksgiving night. I know they don't get paid much. They get paid a little bit more now thanks to Bernie Sanders, I guess, buddy.
They're paid in magic.
They're paid in magic. I've heard shit like that in the game industry. Pass. I'm getting paid in cash, yeah. Motherfuckers.
Cash money, please.
Yeah. Exposure. It looks awesome. Eventually, I'm going to actually get over there. Because there's a lot of... I want to try to make my own lightsaber and do all that sort of shit, too. But, I mean, that ride just looks amazing. I don't know if I'll ever get to the point where I'll stay at this hotel.
I'll stay at the hotel before I die. At some point. I will stay at that hotel.
Yeah.
But... I
could die without staying.
Yeah, not me.
But yeah. You'll get there eventually.
I'm seeing that fucking hotel.
They earmarked your money. They have
they've got my money. It's just, you know, it's a do not open until. It's a post-dated check.
Don't cash that check until.
It's a post-dated check.
Well, Mandalorian episode 5.
Yes.
I forget what this one was titled.
The Gunslinger.
The Gunslinger. Wait. Okay, so right off the top, this particular episode, it did a lot of things that I hate in TV.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it did one particular thing that I hate in TV.
Well, there's a huge variance.
Well, the show doesn't really, like, one of the things I love about the show is it doesn't do a lot. It focuses on very one specific thing. One thing that I really hate in TV shows, and why I generally tend not to watch a lot, because I just get frustrated, turn it off, is shows in which drama is predicated off of otherwise intelligent characters making questionable, if not outright stupid decisions. Like, that's usually what drives me away. And I think that this particular episode leaned really hard into that facet. Aesthetically, it was awesome. I liked going back to Tatooine and going to the cantina and all that sort of stuff. I even liked all the characters, but... Yeah, let's just crack this bad boy open right now.
Yeah,
what do you think about this episode?
It's probably my least favorite.
It's my least favorite episode for certain.
Yeah,
keeping in mind that I'm talking about this show pretty much the same way that we talked about Game of Thrones, in that this show's worst episode is still better than most TV shows' best episodes.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is like, to me, I watch the prequels, okay? You know what I mean? It's like, if it's got guys in with lightsabers, or blasters, Mandalorian armor, spaceships and shit, and it's not Firefly, I'm watching it.
Oh, man. I love Firefly. Actually, watching this episode made me think to myself, you know, this is a lot like Firefly.
That's probably why I didn't like it so much.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm not just this episode. The entire show is a lot like Firefly. Even, especially the going down to the village and all that.
I haven't watched enough Firefly to truly besmirch it. I just really got to do it. This episode had some, in my opinion, issues. But at the same time, I've seen some people talk about. I've seen a lot of people like defend this episode. And I think it's one of those things like.
I don't ever read chatter about it, so I don't know what
I've watched
general
some YouTube videos
is and the I, consensus and, that this is a bad episode.
There are some people that like you know Campia just jumped all over it, and I think he was a little harsh. And it's so much that he wasn't right. I kind of generally agree with him. I just don't like the tone. I don't like it when people, you know, just get really, really, really irate about some piece of art that somebody else worked really hard on. It's just kind of like,
yeah, there's nothing to get irate about.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little over the top. I think the The episode had issues for me that kept it had it fall short of the glory. I mean, I think your issue was with him leaving Baby Yoda
No.
Oh, that's not.
Let's just step through the episode real quick. It starts off awesome. Like, he's in a gun. He's in a space fight with a mercenary that's coming after him, you know, and he's getting the first thing I thought was, oh, yeah, this is Star Wars. They don't have shields on their ship.
Yeah.
You know, because he's just getting the shit blasted.
Well, they do, but they're weird. In fact, that was actually one of the things about Last Jedi that I thought was weird, because Last Jedi was the first time. Well, they talk about shields through the entire show, all from the first episode, from New Hope all the way forward, there's talk of shields.
Really?
Yeah, but you never actually see them like in Star Trek. Like Star Trek,
the shields play a prominent visual role. Especially Next Generation,
they don't play a visual role in the original series. Right. They talk about it. It probably was just they didn't have the special effects. Yeah. But by the time you get to Next Generation, you see the phasers hit the shield and
pops up over.
Yeah. Well, that was never the way it was in Star Wars, right? Until Last Jedi, in which case you see their shields and you see the, like, you know.
I guess I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, I watched Last Jedi once when it came out in theaters and never again after. So, like, I don't remember most of it.
I think I've seen it four times. But
the only part I remember is when they light-speeded through that ship, which was visually the most amazing thing I've seen on awesome. Screen. But, yeah, I don't remember shields in that. But, yeah, when he was getting blasted by that mercenary, I was like, oh, man, like I totally forgot they don't have shields in here. I guess they do, and I just forgot about that, too.
I think they do, but it's
– his ship doesn't have a shield.
I mean, yeah, I think the idea – I don't know if his does or not. I know TIE fighters don't have shields, ironically. That's
what kind of ship does he have?
He has a Razor Crest. I don't know if that Razor Crest is specifically the name of the ship or if it's the name of the type of ship it is.
Okay.
Because in the first episode, the guy says it's pre-Clone Wars. He says Razor Crest model, right?
Okay.
And I don't know if he meant, you know, it'd be weird that if he actually knew that specific ship. Makes sense that it's like the
a
Audi.
Model,
you know
yeah.
What I mean?
Anyways.
But yeah. So continue.
Yeah, he's the guy's shooting at him and whatnot, and he's got him in his sights. What? So he does the I'm a stomp on the brakes, and the guy zooms past him, and then he blasts him and destroys him. And then, like, his ship's damaged, so he has to land at the nearest planet and get it fixed, which happens to be Tatooine. So he lands down on Tatooine. He hides Baby Yoda at some compartment on the ship and talks to what's her name, Pella?
Amy Sedaris.
Amy Sedaris.
I don't know what her name of the show is.
Her name was like Pelly.
Yeah, maybe so.
And no droids fix the ship. And he bolts to the cantina.
That guy really hates droids.
He does not like droids. He's anti-droidite.
Yeah.
Okay, so he goes.
Droid killed his parents.
He goes to you saw the illusion of that for certain during the last time he had some shit hammered out.
Yeah,
he hasn't had a chance to work through his issues because he hasn't been to that blacksmith. So it's all just
that's his therapy.
Yeah,
he's got to get back to the blacksmith.
Maybe that's why he's making weird decisions because he hasn't been able to.
Maybe he should just carry around some ore and a hammer. And he should just ask somebody else. Like, could you beat on this for a second? I got to work through some childhood shit. I gotta clear some shit up.
Clear out the cobwebs so I can start making
sound
decisions
on this for a little
again.
Bit. It helped me out a lot.
Anyways, he ends up in the cantina, which
used to not serve androids or robots, now have them as bartenders.
Owned by droids. I think the droids are running the show.
They're running everything.
Gave me like an audible laugh, one quick ha, when I did notice that. They were bartenders now after that scene from
New
Hope.
Things are weird on Tatooine. I mean, they've got stormtroopers' heads on spikes and,
world, it gets better every time. It's a little bit better. Pretty soon, droids weren't, like 20 years ago, droids weren't allowed in the bar.
And now they're owning
later,
the bar.
They own the bar.
They're not working it, The guild doesn't work there anymore, That's what that's what the droid tells the Mandalorian when he's asking for work. And he's like, I don't necessarily want guild work. But then a dude, I think he's sitting in the same spot Han Solo was sitting in.
Yes, he was.
Yes. And he was like, I got a job for you. So you're shaking your head.
I'm just not a fan of that guy, his characterization, anything about that guy.
It was weird. Yeah. There was a weird,
His costume, I
didn't mind it. His costume definitely felt like expanded universe Star Wars. It was almost like a Dash Rendar, almost sort of. Or like there was like a weird generic kind of quality
yes.
to it. But
he looked like, you know what he looked like?
What?
He looked like if you went to Galaxy's Edge and there was a guy, you know what I mean? Who maybe was a DJ on the side. You know what I mean? But he works at Galaxy's Edge, and that was his costume. You know what I mean? It just didn't feel...
Hey, can I interest you guys some jalapeno poppers?
Yeah, well, it just didn't feel appropriately in-world to me. It was immersion-breaking for me. And his performance was immersion-breaking for
me. It was a little... Well, the character, and I guess maybe it's just the way that he was written, it was a little... I guess schizophrenic, because at first he kind of oscillates between, you know, being this coolest cucumber sort of, you know, bounty hunter, but then he's like a very naive kid that really doesn't know what he's doing. But then he's like this cutthroat, like rogue that, you know, gonna fucking kill someone point blank without a second question. Well, but then like, you know, he's honorable enough to like, you know, I don't really care about the money. I just want to get into the guild and blah, blah, blah. Like, I didn't really get a good read on that character.
He's the kid from the Unforgiven. It's the same exact... No, it's exactly the same fucking plot.
What is this character's name again? Do you know, Kelly?
It's like Toro or something.
Toro. Calican. It's something close. It's like
Toro Calican, I think. Yeah.
What is it?
Toro Calican.
Toro Calican? Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah. Toro Bull. Anyway, so yeah, like this...
Toro McClunky.
His name's McClunky McCallahan.
Damn Irish.
But yeah, so he wants to go after this assassin, like someone who's been pulling off assassinations for all of the world's biggest crime syndicates, including the Hutts and whatnot. And I guess she went crossways with someone, and now she's hiding out. And he has a tracker for her. And, you know, he needs the Mandalorian's help in order to bring her in. He doesn't want the money. He would give him the money. He just wants to make a reputation for himself so he can get into the guild. And at first, the Mandalorian's like, yeah, good luck with that. And like, she's a killer. You're not going to get anywhere with him. But then, like, he makes... So we already know that the Mandalorian is something approximating a good person. He has morals of some sort.
He has a code. Every man has a code.
He has some kind of... So this guy makes like an appeal to him, like, come on, I need this to get into the guild and blah, 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 help me out. And I guess that's enough for him to be like, okay.
Well, he tells him he can have all the money.
He tells him he can have all the money.
All I want... And I imagine the bounty was pretty good because she's really well wanted. And he's like, all I want is the, you know, thing. And I think that's what it essentially...
Well, yeah.
He's like, okay, I need the
money.
Because
he was looking for the job. He came
so I think it was
the
about
job.
The money for him.
Well... Yeah. But in a certain like so, I feel like if he was going to take that job for the money, he should not have been nearly as trusting or as loose with this dude as he was. We'll get to what happens a little bit later. But like I feel like if it was really just okay, we're gonna do this job and I'm gonna get the money. So like the first thing this dude does is break the tracker because like he doesn't want him to get the tracker and then run off and leave him and then you know he's shit out of luck. It's like okay, that makes sense. I understand that. That so now he has to rely on this dude to get the money. So after they break the tracker, they go so Baby Yoda gets out at some point.
He does.
Little wily little creature gets out.
Yeah.
I can't remember. It's obviously before he shows up with the dude. No, he shows up. He tells him to meet at the hangar at some time. He shows up. Baby Yoda's got out. Pelly's got her. Like, she's nursing him like a nursemaid or whatever. You know, they're whatever. Yoda is
not nursing him.
Well, not nursing him, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So Yoda's not going to be a super prominent part of this episode. For the time being.
Yeah.
So, you know, he meets up with Toro at outside of this thing. He's got a couple speeders. He told him to get speeders. They zoom off into the desert, you know, and looks pretty fun, honestly. Like, I would race a speeder in the
speeder
desert.
Speeder bikes are cool.
Yeah. So they run into Tusken Raiders. It's cool to see those guys again. Like, this was... Like, between the Jawas and the Tusken Raiders...
Well, the Jawas, to me... made a lot more sense. Like, I felt this episode was needlessly fan service-y. I mean, to me, I was just like, it just seemed like they were going out of their way.
Yeah, like
remember Tatooine, remember the fucking cantina. We're back there. We can recreate
like
Han's
seat.
You know?
Like, yeah.
This guy's sitting in Han's seat.
The Raiders, the Tusken Raiders. Yeah, there was, and I got that sense too. Like,
I mean, the Tusken Raiders were in it, and the
it was definitely a scene that could have been cut because it didn't really add or subtract from any other part of the narrative.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I could argue that the whole episode could be cut because it didn't seem to like last week's episode to me had a point. And people were saying that episode didn't really, you know, develop the plot. It most certainly did. This one, other than having a guy walk up in
at
the very end, spoiler alert. This one seemed to have very little.
It didn't really push anything.
No.
Yeah. So I mean,
there's a
dead bounty hunter. Turns out he was blasted by a sniper bolt, and as soon as the Mandalorian figures this out, they try to take cover. He gets blasted by the bolt.
Yeah.
But you know, his Beskar steel saves him. You know, he takes a couple shots, gets behind cover. They decide to sneak up on her on the cover of night. Like, it was actually a pretty cool sequence, I thought, when they were racing at night, shooting the flares.
That was cool.
That was pretty cool. Like, I actually liked that sequence a lot. The Mandalorian got hit, his bike got blasted, and the other dude sped on. So right before, she has him in his sights, right before she could blast him square on, Toro, you know, gets the drop on her, you know. She gets up, like she's about to surrender, throws a knife or something at him, and they get into some weird...
I thought that tussle was very, Warrior Princess.
I was going to say, it was a very original series kind of, you know, fight.
That was not staged the best.
No.
I don't, this episode just felt a little, the whole thing felt fan filmy to me.
It felt
a little amateurish. You know what I
yeah,
mean?
I would be.
I hate to say that, but it's. Just
I would be willing to bet
I,
that this was probably the first script written.
Well, you know, this one was written by Dave Filoni, and I was expecting.
You thought there was going to be more lore.
I think my issue with this is that there was just a general lack of imagination. You know what I mean?
What really bummed you out the most about this then? Because it seems like as I'm retelling it, like there's a lot of.
So first off, you know, we land on Tatooine. I'm like, okay, cool, Tatooine. And I'm like, it's cool. I like seeing the planet, you know. I'm not like, Tatooine, fuck Tatooine. No, I mean, I like Tatooine. It's great. They land on it. We're like, okay, cool. This is cool. This seems like in the same exact place that the Millennium Falcon was, very similar to the place that the Millennium Falcon was when they ran out there.
Yeah.
And he's walking around, and it's like, okay, it's cool. And you see the spikes, and you're like, oh, nice. And then, you know, the droids come over. The droids looked pretty good. You know what I mean? Those are not my favorite kind of droids. But I was like, whatever, it's fine. I was expecting something really big to happen. And then a minute when that guy showed up,
that character killed it for you.
Yeah, well, it's like he comes into the bar. I'm like, oh, cool. You know, some of the coolest. Look at all the interesting characters. You know, there were some cool. We're back in the cantina. You know, that's cool. You know, even though I was kind of like, okay, this is starting to feel a little too like we're going out of our way to be familiar, you know? Like, he goes, you know, I mean, and then there's a guy, and he's sitting right where Han Solo sat, you know? And he looks like a
Dollar General Han Solo.
He just, he's like a weird vest jacket thing. It looked like a motorcycle jacket. It was black, but had like blue.
Blue was in there somewhere.
You know, it's like, and he starts talking to him, and he was just too. He looked like I don't know, man. I was not feeling that guy really. You know,
okay.
And I don't know if it's a combination of writing. You know, I mean, or his read, or maybe just. Just saying like, oh, let's get another read on that or something, you know?
Hmm.
It just, the whole thing felt a little, you know, a little it moved really quick in a weird way.
It did move quick.
You know what I mean?
And the dichotomy between the personality of the Mandalorian and the personality of this guy, I don't think they worked very well together.
There wasn't any chemistry.
And they were in a situation where it was almost like you would have expected like a Rush Hour buddy cop kind of chemistry, but it was not there. And not even like an antagonistic chemistry. There wasn't even, if it was antagonistic, like, oh, these two guys, they don't like each other, but, you know, they got to get through this job together or something. Like, neither of those things was there.
It was obviously a choice that they made, you know what I mean? Like, they made a choice with that guy.
Well, I think
they were going for like, you know, he needs to feel, you know, he can't be too grizzled because he's young and he's coming up, but he needs to be a little, you know, like
we need to make untrustworthy. We need to make his heel turn convincing. Yeah, is what it is.
Yeah, it was just like a weird, and it came up there because solution to that.
Because the tension is so okay. So what happens is they cuff the woman. I forget her name. Fennec, I believe.
Yeah.
They cuff her, and because one of the speeder bikes was destroyed, the Mandalorian is like, okay, I need you to go get that creature. I forget what it's called. And he, the Toro was like, what? So you could run off with my bounty? I'm not going. So then he's just like, fine, I'll go. Just don't kill her or whatever.
Yeah.
And he goes to get this creature. And as he's gone, this woman is like, you know, he's worth a lot of money. You can, like he's wanted from the guild and blah, 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 blah. If you captured him and returned him, like, you would be a legend and whatnot. And he was like, you're right, I would be. And just basically kills her right then and there, takes the speeder bike. It goes off to the hangar. So the Mandalorian returns, finds her dead. He's like, ah, damn. He goes to the hangar, and sure enough, he's there with, you know, Baby Yoda in one arm and a gun to the other woman in his other arm. Yeah. And
he's got a gun to Baby Yoda's head.
Yeah. So, like, he's got the drop on the Mandalorian, and he tells Peli to put cuffs on him. So he puts his arms behind his head, but he has, like, a little thing in his hand.
Yeah.
So at an opportune moment, it flashes off. He moves, Peli moves out the way. He starts shooting into the nothing, Toro does, because he can't see anything. And the Mandalorian gets off to the side, shoots him. It's pretty anticlimactic, honestly. It went super fast, but, I mean, there wasn't much time left to do.
It was very anticlimactic.
But they shoot him, and then they find Baby Yoda hiding. And, you know, it's his moment of looking super adorable when he pokes out from behind the thing. But after that...
And then it was over. It was just like...
after that, he just takes some money off of the dude and gives it to Peli, and they just fly off into space.
Yeah.
And there wasn't really any consequence or any circumstance that would push the narrative forward, except for at the end when, you know, the camera cuts to Fennec's dead body and someone in a cloak.
Boba Fett.
Or something. You think it's Boba Fett?
I think it's Boba Fett.
You think it's Boba Fett?
It is.
I think that was the whole reason they had to get to Tatooine. I think they spent, I mean, and they could have put Boba Fett anywhere, really. But I think from a writing standpoint, they said, we've got to get him on Tatooine. He's got to have something to do there. Because that, to me, it was just like a chess piece episode where we've got to have
Boba Fett to pop in.
I guess. I mean, maybe okay. It's not Boba Fett. Maybe it's Moff Gideon, but I don't think so. I think it's probably Boba Fett. I think that's going to be their big second reveal.
Well, Boba Fett would be weird because, like... if he's just hanging out on Tatooine, then you would think that people would have seen him. And the response when the Mandalorian shows up is, "Oh, we haven't seen one of you guys in a while."
Well, in the aftermath books, supposedly, which are canon, someone found Mandalorian armor and put it on and was like, you know, using it and like to keep some people in line. And he was like a mayor of some small Tatooine town.
Oh,
you
weird.
Know what I mean?
Like a warlord.
Yeah. Well, I didn't read it, but I think the implication was is he was using it to kind of like keep, you know, not like to do good, I guess, just to keep bad guys that, you know, his name was Cobb Vanth, I guess.
Interesting.
And so everyone's wondered, like, okay, he found the Mandalorian armor. Is it Boba Fett's armor? They didn't say it was Boba Fett's armor, but they're like, was it Boba Fett's armor? And so maybe Boba Fett, maybe he watched the whole thing go down and he wants the Mandalorian's Beskar armor because his armor is fucking gone. Or maybe the Cobb Vanth shit is bullshit and Boba Fett killed him and got his armor back and wants to, who knows? Maybe
you
it's
just
not,
think there's some
maybe
reason
it's not Boba Fett
to pull Boba Fett into this though. That's what maybe. You believe.
The Nerdist did a thing where they were like they played the sound effects of Boba Fett walking in and like if you listen to the episode, it's like the guy who walks up, it's got cowboy spurs, you know, walking Boba Fett when he walks in an Empire, he walks into the scene like, you know, we would love for you to join us, and Boba Fett comes out.
Yes, it's cowboy got spurs.
Almost the exact same sound effect. You know,
I gotcha.
I mean? And so the people at Nerdist were like, dude, it's gotta be Boba Fett, you know? Because it feels so weird why they would end up on Tatooine unless it was just for the fan service.
It could have been, but I mean,
again,
we'll see, I guess.
A lack of imagination. I just, okay, if you want to get over to Tatooine and you want to do something, you know.
The only reason he's on Tatooine is because he crashed, or not crashed,
yeah,
landed,
he
but
to land
he had to land after that fixed. Firefight. So, I mean, I guess that could have technically been any planet they could have done that on. There wasn't any reason it had to be Tatooine.
Yeah, exactly.
Other than the fact that they just wanted it to be Tatooine. Yeah.
Which, I mean, you know, they'd probably be like, you know, if Dave Filoni was here, he'd be like, Tatooine's awesome, right? I mean, Tatooine. I'd be like,
we haven't seen it since the first movie.
That's true. Actually, we've seen it a bunch of times since the first movie.
When? Well, like in the movies?
Oh, yeah.
I guess I don't recall.
They go in the first movie, they're there. In the third movie, they're there. That's where Jabba lives.
Oh, right. That's right. I forgot about Return of the Jedi.
In Phantom Menace, they're there. You know what I mean? If half the movie takes place on Tatooine.
Oh, that was Tatooine.
In Attack of the Clones, he goes back to Tatooine to attack the Tusken Raiders.
I'm not sure. The prequels, you know, you're talking spaghetti to me at this point.
Yeah. Our point is, we've been to Tatooine a lot.
A lot.
But
that's why everyone thought, like, at the new movie started, they thought that was Tatooine. Oh, it's Jakku? Sand planet. It's Tatooine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Jakku, at least, that there's, I mean, it's a desert planet, you know, and J.J. Abrams very pointedly was like, we want to evoke the original trilogy of Star Wars. He's like, desert planet, ice planet, forest planet. We need all those things in this movie. I mean, it was very much like a greatest hits of the original trilogy. The whole point was, after the prequels, it was supposed to be like, hey, guys, remember this shit?
Yeah.
This shit was fucking awesome. We can still do this. We got a whole box of this shit right over here. You know what I mean? And it pretty much worked like gangbusters, you know?
Yeah.
I love The Force Awakens. But I saw it like 8 times in the theaters. But and if people were like, oh, it's just a remake of New Hope, it's like, not exactly. You know, it's more of a greatest hit.
It's more of an homage to New Hope.
But you know what? I liked all those movies, and I like this movie too. So eat a dick. Yeah. I, you know, don't watch it. But anyway, we've been to Tatooine a lot.
Okay.
But I mean, you know, he could have landed, and you know, it could have been under some kind of weird. You know, they could have taken the whole droids or running everything to the next level. Maybe it was some kind of droid thing that he helped people escape from, or just something different. You know what I mean? Or even if it was a bounty hunter, maybe it's not just a weird looking dude. Maybe it's not like the guy from Vinyl's son. Maybe it's maybe it's like a Tusken Raider who's a bounty hunter who speaks through like a weird ass translator that he talks to, then he holds to, and he puts and it talks for him in some kind of robotic vocabulator voice. That would have been cool, you know. I mean, it would have been different, you know. It would have been, and it was. Of course, they probably were like, well, then we'd have two people who couldn't see their faces interacting in the show. It's like, yeah, but you know, I don't know.
This is a show. And to that point, like one of the best scenes in the first episode was him opposite a droid when they were, you know, in that firefight. So I mean, that's not much of an excuse to not do something like that.
It's true. I mean, they've made it work lots of times.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about the Jawas is the scene with the Jawas. It was like taking the Jawas, but it was new stuff. It was like we were seeing what the inside of their ship looked like and how their thing worked on top. Yeah. And it was fun. It wasn't just.
We saw that they like eggs.
Yeah, that was all really cool. And it was interesting stuff about their character. We didn't know any stuff about that. And we got a little bit of that with the Tusken Raiders where he was talking to them and they were like, okay, he's trading. But then we just spent a lot of time with this dude. And I understand it's like about Western tropes, but okay, if this is going to be your guy, make him more interesting or something. Find something to make him more interesting.
Pick a character trait and go there, you know, and not just have like wade into the shallow ends of each different type of character trait.
I mean, give him a reason, because I mean, Tatooine had slavery, you know what I mean? Anakin was a slave, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe this guy was like an ex-slave, and maybe he's obviously dealing with that. Maybe he's not all so put together and everything. Maybe he's a lot more rough and tumble.
Well, he was desperate to get into the guild.
Which would make a lot more sense if he had been a slave.
Yeah,
you know
maybe,
what I mean?
But they just didn't expound. The whole point is that he wasn't a character that they were going to. He was just a cog to sort of push.
But it just wasn't a very interesting cog.
Yeah, it's like, to what end is he's a cog to push the story forward, but to what end? Like, just so that we can get maybe Boba Fett's feet showing up at the end. Like, you could cut that scene and put it at the end of just about any one of these episodes.
Yeah, and it kind of felt like the girl, she's such an awesome, and maybe we haven't seen the end of her. Maybe Boba Fett's going to, you know, do some magic and she's going to get back up. Sprinkle some crack on her.
Yeah, sprinkle a little crack on her. That's what it was. It was a cop. It was a cop from Dave Chappelle. I was like, sprinkle a little crack on her.
Get back up. But yeah, I mean, maybe he's going to do that and she's going to be back in the thing. But yeah, I just I felt she was kind of like seemed a little interesting, and then she was dead immediately.
And
then
she was dead.
She was far more interesting than that guy.
She was
get rid of that guy.
1,000%
yeah,
more interesting.
And have her be there. And then, of course, I thought like, well, he just paired up with a girl.
Like,
on the
what would have
episode.
Been more interesting is if she killed him and then tried to use getting the Mandalorian, returning the Mandalorian as a way to buy off her the price on her head.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been more interesting.
For here's an example. Here's exactly what I'm talking about. I just watched episode 4 of Rick and Morty. Season 4.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, dude, this season has been great.
Really?
And episode 4 was it was fucking so good, dude. It was all about heists and like. Dude, episode 4 is so great. I almost want to stop the podcast, have you watch it so we can talk about it.
Well, I don't want you to spoil any of it.
Yeah, dude, it's so good. But it's imaginative. It's so imaginative. It's so, like, just the shit that happens in it, like the weird stuff, you know what I mean? And that's what this episode of Star Wars has got that going on big time.
Yeah,
that's
but this, but episode this particular lacked, show you know is what I mean? All about reining all of that in. Like, yeah. This is a show that is really close to the metal of not being Jedi or Sith or a space, you know, samurai or anything like that. It's about the gritty survival of a dude that is basically, you know, living hand to mouth, right?
Yeah.
You know, and he makes a decision that pretty much cuts off his lifeline to that. So there are probably, if you're a creative writer, there are probably opportunities within that to create some pretty fantastical shit. But also, I think they're working with, they're trying to create a really cool, down-to-earth, sort of gritty Western story under a particular budget.
I get it, and I think they might have overdone it a little bit on this. I think they might have veered a little
Nicholas Winding Refn'd it.
Honestly, that would have been better because at least I wouldn't have heard that guy talk. You know what I mean? If he had just if he had just stood there looking
menacing,
maybe it was
Ryan Gosling.
You know what I mean? Yeah,
just...
I would have been like, man, that guy's a real fucking.
It's time to drive.
Yeah, exactly. Like that would have been a pairing. You know what I mean? The Mandalorian, who's already pretty quiet,
right.
With some
being
out-quieted
by an even quieter
quiet psycho from Drive. It's like those two guys could take over the universe.
The
you know,
Mandalorian's like, you don't talk much, do you? And he's like. No,
exactly.
And they speed
never
off.
Had to. You know? Meanwhile, I was like, "Stay away from those two fucking psychos."
I like this idea a lot more.
Well, I mean, the point is that like, okay, make him a slave. Bring that aspect into it.
Yeah,
make him a little more sympathetic, so that it's more of a thing. You know?
Yeah,
give him maybe
because like the entire episode, you're waiting for him to turn. You're waiting
exactly.
for the heel turn,
and he's so not. Lived in. He doesn't fit the environment. Give this guy some grit, man. Give him like a fucking like robotic leg or something. You know what I mean? Because you know, he had his leg chopped off as punishment or something. You know, and I mean, the guy's like, I really want to get in the guild. So you feel this desperation.
He did kind of. Maybe this is like the son of the fucking dude who was in Vinyl.
Yeah.
He did kind of have a little bit of that trust fund kid quality.
Yes.
So he looked like a fire fest.
He seemed like he was a DJ in his off time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. He's just bounty hunting on the side.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, it was just. And then like, you know, maybe the guy had his eye cut out or something. Just something. What I mean? And then so when they go. You know, when they go and the guy, you know, when he gets tempted, his desperation is such that you actually, from his point of view, you actually sympathize with him. But then the Mandalorian, who also sympathizes with him earlier on.
Yeah, which is why
he makes a comment about, you used to be a slave because he knows that tattoo. And the guy was like, yeah. And then the Mandalorian eventually has to put him down ice cold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like, holy shit, that was ice cold. In a much more ice cold way. Than the way that went down at the end of the thing, you know. But at the end of the day, the Mandalorian isn't fucking around.
You know, and it could have been a situation where we joked earlier about how the lack of a blacksmith means he can't work through his issues.
Yeah,
they could have connected that, like if
with his own abandonment
of
his childhood. Yes.
Yeah, you could have made that connection, and then that would have made him shooting and killing him a little bit more substantial. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
It almost would have been symbolic, even of him killing that portion of himself that he's working, coming to terms with. with.
Maybe, or also it would have shown the degree to which he has a connection to Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
Where he, you know, he feels something for this character, but this character crossed the line.
Yeah.
Just like in episode of Rebels where Obi-Wan and Maul face off for the final time. You know, it's like Obi-Wan doesn't want to fight Maul. He's not going to fight him. He's like, I'm not going to fight. But then Maul figures out Obi-Wan's there to protect somebody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's like, or someone. And Obi-Wan's like, okay, you're fucking dead. And out comes the lightsaber. And of course, that fight lasts 2 seconds because by that point, Obi-Wan is just, you know, unbeatable. Yeah, I mean, it would have given us, there could have been that. You know what I mean? Where it's like, yeah, he killed the guy, but the way it happened, but it felt so, it was so unimpactful.
It was empty. Yeah, it was very empty.
It was empty. There was no pathos there. There was, you know, you didn't feel like it was a choice that he had to make. Really, right. It was a no brainer. This guy was just a dork. Get him out of here. You know what I mean? It's like, why is he even still breathing? You know. Whereas if the character had been more sympathetic, but also, you know, more interesting and more, you know, it would have, because that's the thing in Unforgiven, you know, that character is really annoying. You're like, God, this fucking asshole, this is a little dumb.
But there's something there.
But you feel bad for him. And what happens in Unforgiven is eventually he gets his chance to kill somebody. And the whole film, he's talked about everybody he's killed and how badass he is. And you know he's fucking full of shit.
Yeah.
But eventually he shoots somebody and he kills him. And it just wrecks him. He can't deal at all. And then eventually he tells William Money, he's like, I'm not like you. I can't do this. I can't. I'm not a killer. And he's like, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
And then right about that time, the girl shows up and tells them both that their partner got killed by, you know, Little Bill. And so, and of course, that's devastating to William Money.
You know what? I think I just need to watch Unforgiven.
Unforgiven is so good, dude.
That's what I'm getting. Like, this kind of dovetails off into either talking about The Witcher or talking about Unforgiven.
Well, there's a lot of crossover.
There's a lot of, like, all of these things merge together.
But that's
so,
the thing.
It's interesting you talk about, like, the being the sympathetic character. I think that a part of the reason, I started this off by talking about dumb decisions. Like, I feel like maybe the decisions seem dumb to me because I don't have a connection to the character that I think we're supposed to believe the Mandalorian has. Like, when he decides to leave him alone with Fennec, like, to me, that is an unconscionably dumb decision. Like, he's the Mandalorian. He has Beskar armor. He's obviously a better gunslinger than this gunslinger, quote unquote.
I think that's why, like, he left him alone with Fennec.
Well, no, but wait, what do you mean?
Well,
he could have just been like, because the guy was like, what, leave you alone with my bounty? He's like, look, I'm not going to take your money, but if I wanted to, you'd be dead by now. Go get it.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's all
he could have killed him right then and just been like, okay, then I will just take the speeder and we'll go. You know what I mean? He could have done that. That would have been interesting.
Yeah.
That would have been kind of like snow. That would have been a Snoke turn. And we would have been a holy shit. He just offed that dude. You know what I mean?
Or even if he didn't off him, even if he just like shot him in his leg and be like, good luck getting back to the cantina or something. Yeah. You know?
That
give
would
him
have
a
been,
fighting chance.
That would have
still,
been more but hardcore. That would have been better. I mean, I think he thought, like, this guy, he can't. I think this was his calculation.
He's
like, I can kill this guy. There's no scenario where this guy is gonna be able to kill me. You know what I mean? I'm going to need that thing. You know
what thing?
The big what it was called?
The creature.
Yeah, the creature. We got to have that thing to get back.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Well,
we can't all three get on that speeder. And even if it's just me and the girl, I'm not sure we can all three.
But
get
I'm
on
not
speeder.
Sure. Of course, yeah. But what I'm saying is, like, why? It's if he had a sympathetic. If I felt like he had the level of sympathy that we wanted to have for that character, then I would understand why he would be like, okay, I'll do it. But because I don't get that from him or from that character myself, it just seems like, who cares? Why are you going out of your way for this fucking dude? Like,
yeah, it just seemed to me that he was just kind of like, I need this money. Like,
he could take the money if he wanted to.
No, yeah, I mean, he's not going to kill the guy. You're just like, why didn't he just kill the guy?
Well, I'm not even saying kill the guy. Even if he just wounded him or something, like, there's a whole host of things that this dude can do. He's a fucking badass Mandalorian covered head to toe in Beskar steel.
Yeah.
If he wanted to, he could fucking knock them both out. And, like, you know, he did say, like, we could drag you. Like, if he wanted to, he could drag them both. Like, there are a number of different ways that it could have gone. The last thing I would have figured that this dude would have wanted to do was leave an impressionable, obviously naive, obviously unexperienced bounty hunter with a stone cold killer.
Yeah, I mean, in retrospect, and granted, she had things on, but, you know, I mean...
But, I mean, I guess maybe from our point of view, as people who've watched a lot of TV and shit, like, we knew what was going to happen. When those two were left alone,
sure.
We knew it was going to happen.
I mean, his calculus was probably like, what's he going to do? Set her free? You know what I mean? She'll kill him.
Yeah.
And then I'll just have to come back and deal with her, you know? Or, you know, what are they going to get up? Both get on the speeder and take off? They can't both get on the speeder. So he's just there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's like, what? And what? You know? He's like, I'll go get the fucking thing. I mean, I don't think it was that big of a deal, but I do think that if he had shot him and just killed him, that would have been, you know, and then they would have, and then he and the girl had some else going on. That would have been like, whoa.
That would have been, you know, that would have been more interesting for certain.
But
probably would have been a little less dumb.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think that if he had, you know, if there was an aspect of the character, again, if the character was, had been more sympathetic and maybe just a little greener, but you know what I mean? Like the guy was pretty green. But just a little more, you know, and maybe the guy has some kind of infirmary that doesn't allow him to go get it. Or maybe the Mandalorian doesn't, they don't even have a back and forth about it. He doesn't even tell him to go get it. Mandalorian's like, all right, you stay here with her. I'll go get this thing. You know what I mean? Because the guy can't go get it, you know. And then that takes place. And then the Mandalorian comes back and then he's like, oh, you know, there'd be so much more.
Even like if, you know, yeah, you're probably right. And maybe if we go down into like the minutia of explaining that decision, it gets a little weirder. Like there are probably other reasons, you know, it was night. The dude doesn't have his binoculars anymore. The Mandalorian has the vision.
He thinks about it for a second. He thinks about what he's going to do.
Yeah.
He's like, am I going to kill this guy right here? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's like, I could kill him. And then, you know, there's a moment where he stops and he's just like, what is the proper play?
That was definitely the Witcher moment where he's got the choices and he's cycling through like there's the axe.
Yeah.
You will get you will go get the creature. Yeah. Or there's the one where he's like, all right, fine, I'll do it. That was definitely the moment where he was thinking about his decision. And then he settles on good Geralt, like, fine, I'll go get it. You know? Yeah.
He probably shouldn't have gone and gotten it.
Oh, just obviously.
From a scripting standpoint.
From an experienced bounty hunter standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, just like why risk this? Because there's a good possibility that she'll take his fucking blaster from him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean? Like, this dude sucks.
You know, or literally he could drag her. Or, she's a bounty.
He had gotten the drop on her before. And still needed to be saved by the man at the end.
And it's like, if there's a bounty, it could be, I can take you in hot or cold. They say that in the very beginning of the episode. He could just kill her, throw over the bike, and fucking be gone. Mandalorian would be out there with his dick in his pants.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or dick in his hand, sorry. We've all got our dick in our pants. But we're not slap ass.
You're not slapping ass over here, though. So
but,
that's how it goes.
Yeah, so, I mean, and that's the thing. There just was a lot in this episode that just felt, It didn't so much feel.
I think the fact that I have all of these weird annoyances with this decision and that decision, I think speaks to a greater issue.
Oh, it does.
With the episode.
It does. And that's actually probably my issue with the episode. It's a really funny, there was a really great video essay, and I'm not sure if it's about The Last Jedi or if it's about some aspect of Star Wars. It might have been about how Star Wars was saving the edit. It's on YouTube. It's really good.
You talked about that last time.
But it talks about how little things like why didn't they just do this or why didn't blah blah blah. That shit, if you any amazing movie is fucking chocked full of that shit. You know what I mean? But if the movie's working, it doesn't bother you and you never even notice. You're just like, you know. And we talked about that last time with why in God's name would they fly the Millennium Falcon when they knew they were being tracked right back to the Rebel base.
Right,
you know. But I never noticed it until like 2 years ago or something, you know. If it's working, you don't ever notice that stuff. But man, if it's not working, that stuff starts to become like, why are they doing this?
Yeah.
Why are you doing this?
This episode, come on, man. This episode was more full of the not working, I think, than it was the working. But, I mean, the moments that were cool were still pretty damn cool.
I mean, again, it's a guy wearing Mandalorian armor walking around shooting shit in a fucking spaceship with a Baby Yoda. I'm there. You know what I mean? If it was just him walking around in a circle for 30 minutes, you know, with the music playing, I'd be like, what? Okay, you know, I don't get it completely, but, you know, it was, what else am I going to do? But You know, in reference to the other episodes, like I felt like episode 2 and episode 3 were really good.
Those were the best episodes.
Episode
in my opinion.
4 was fine.
Episode 4,
but
think episode 4 was equally good, but it was a very different episode.
Yeah, it was.
It was doing a different thing.
It was doing a different thing. It was the most TV feeling episode up to me. And this episode also felt like TV to me.
This was
in a bad way.
Yeah.
A friend of mine wrote on. He's like, "Why do I feel when I'm watching The Mandalorian like I'm watching, you know, Xena? Sometimes I kind of feel like I'm watching Xena Warrior Princess." And I was like, "That's never a good sign." You know what I mean? And granted, it has a lot to do with them walking around in the desert a lot, as they did that quite a bit on that show. But you know, there was a general kind of, you know, McClunkiness to this episode. It just, you know, I don't know. It just wasn't up to par with the other episodes. It wasn't as it wasn't as succinctly scripted, you know. It wasn't. I think the idea of following the Mandalorian and not really having anything in the meanwhile, you know, that happening works in a cinematic way. It was very almost meditative.
Super dig that.
Yeah, there was a cinematic integrity there that this episode didn't seem to have, you know. And you know, again, they can't all be gems. But, you know, maybe next episode will be better.
Well, this was the 5th, so we have 3 more episodes left.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine it. I mean, and I don't want to say that, again, I still think that, you know, for comparative purposes, you know, comparing it to other TV shows, this is still a pretty good episode.
Yeah.
I was entertained by it.
I was entertained by it. Yeah. If it wasn't Star Wars stuff, though, if it was just other people doing, it was like a really show, yeah. I would have been like, it's not so good.
I think it's going to be pretty hard for this show to put out an episode worse than this, though.
Yeah.
Like, I think just by nature of the fact of what they're obviously trying to build to something.
This episode felt aimless to me.
Yeah.
Way that I was like, gosh, guys, tell me that you've got better ideas than this. Like, just waiting
They needed to get to that dude's feet.
Yeah.
You know?
And,
you know, I don't know if maybe they had a couple different ideas and this was the best one. But yeah. whatever the case may be, they ended up getting to that dude's feet. So now we can move on to hopefully the next level of this story.
I think that if they could have made that character, the guy, you know, more
Toro.
Yeah, if they'd made Toro more sympathetic, made him an ex slave in Tatooine, given him some real need to be in the guild,
really have any character building moments. Like,
no,
when they were camped out at night, that could have been a cool moment for them to just, you know, talk,
yeah,
and then like build a little something,
yeah. And there could have been things about him visually that were clues. I mean, again, it's a visual medium, he doesn't have to tell us stuff,
yeah,
but there was a black box there. It was just kind of a douchey looking guy, you know, in a motorcycle jacket,
yeah.
I didn't, you know, give him some, you know, some grit, give him something to look, you know, some part of his character, you know, and then give him a British accent.
Yeah. And then give him so that he doesn't sound like he's going to Tosche Station to pick up power converters.
Give him a British
with
accent.
Every line he's speaking.
I mean, to me, if there's any question when you guys are making a Star Wars property, if your dialogue's a little dicey, you're like, I don't know if this dialogue is so good. You have any question about it, get a British guy to say it. You know what I mean? Obi-Wan Kenobi in the prequels, people. I mean, you know, it's a British guy can swing some of that shit.
British accents are, or accents in general, but particularly British accents, can knock it out of the park for sci-fi and fantasy.
Exactly.
So,
and sci-fi fantasy, it's like Game of Thrones. There have been some scenes in Game of Thrones that would have been pretty rough if it had been an American guy talking. You know what I mean? But the fact they're all that, you know, it's
Tyrion was American, from New Jersey of all places, but he put on the accent thick.
A British accent to a sci-fi fantasy property from a script standpoint is kind of like Vaseline on the lens.
On the lens.
You know what I mean? You just and that character, Toro, could have used a little Vaseline on the lens. You know, give him a robot leg, make him a slave, make him younger, make him, you know, a little bit more, you know, like maybe a male version, a little bit slightly older, but male version of Newt from fucking Aliens. Give him a robotic leg because the slave master's cut his leg off, you know what I mean? And give him, he has to get in the guild. As a slave growing up on Tatooine, bounty hunters were the people he looked up to, because that was the only rich people he saw,
The freedom, the freedom of being a bounty hunter.
He doesn't want to be give him that, give him something, and then, so when the Mandalorian eventually has to off him, which he does, You know, with a coldness, there's a moment after he kills him where you can tell, you know, through the helmet, you can see.
Yeah, when he goes over and looks at the body, exactly. There's a moment where he looks at it exactly. And the camera just gets shoots on his face, and it's just like that for a bit. Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right.
That would have made this episode so much better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then cut that fight out with the chick. They just get her and that's
it. Yeah, he gets the drop on her. That's all you really need.
Yeah, we don't need the
weird. She already displayed her badassness in, you know, her sniper shooting. You know, she popped the Mandalorian like three times.
Yeah. What's weird is she's actually done good fighting and other things.
Well, yeah, she's a martial artist.
Yeah,
isn't
it's Ming-Na Wen.
Yeah.
From like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and that sort of stuff.
Which is kind of a bummer that they killed her, honestly. Like, that could have been a cool character for other things.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. Like, that's, you know.
I mean, this is what they should. I mean, so everything about the other character, they get her, and maybe they find her in a more interesting setting. Like, maybe it's like a fucking blown out spaceship that's out in the desert.
Yeah.
And she's like holed up there or something, you know, or something. That, you know, something more interesting. Again, it was lack of imagination.
Just up out in the mountains. Dunes,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, the other guy being dead was cool, but it just seemed random that she would still be there, or did she lay a trap for that guy, but that thing just sat there the entire time, or she had just killed that guy? I don't know. There's a lot of happenstance. Yeah, it should have been a better setting, something more cinematic, something more interesting. And granted, maybe it was a budget issue, but we're writing it ourselves here now. So they go there, and this time when he leaves, the guy doesn't kill her. You know what I mean? She convinces him that the Mandalorian is actually the bounty. You know what I mean? And that, you know, she can, you know, and that if he lets her go, blah, 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 he actually lets her leave. He helps her escape. And so when the Mandalorian shows up, you know, they're gone. And so then the Mandalorian has to go all the way back to the thing or whatever, because that way we have her to bring back in another episode.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's still out there. You know? Maybe she still will be. Yeah, which could have been cool. You know?
We'll see if the feet bring her back to life at some point.
If the feet. But the feet's got a back of crack.
we'll have to come back next week for this one. So, you know, that's bit of a downer, a little bit of a downer this week. It was still entertaining.
It was a step back. It was
a noticeable step back. Yeah. So, you know, that's all we got for you this time. If you like this video, please subscribe to the channel. Hit the bell for alerts when we update. We try to post things regularly now. I actually just finished. I just beat Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening on the Switch.
I beat it too on the
Switch. Did you?
Oh, I beat it, yeah.
Belden
made I beat me. It before you.
You probably did.
Yeah.
I've
had it beat for probably a couple weeks now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just beat it a couple nights ago. Yeah. So I'm going to try to do a review on that one and post that bad boy up. But like, subscribe, share, all that shit. See you next week, everyone.
Bye-bye.